Again, you found a way to stay cool somehow, some way. Looks like a couple more hot days ahead. Heat warning remains in effect. Going to get up to 40 with the Humidex today and 37 tomorrow. May cool off a bit by Wednesday, but we'll wait and see on that. Some good hot Canadian weather, and we saw some good hot Canadian sports over the weekend as the CEBL, the Canadian Elite Basketball League, began its summer tournament, its summer series, as it's dubbed it, down in St. Catharines at the Meridian Center. With two games Saturday, two more games yesterday, two more games today. But we saw the debut of the expansion Ottawa Blackjacks, and they looked good early. They were tied at halftime. They were down by four after three quarters, and then things began to kind of fall apart in the fourth quarter. They eventually fell to Guelph 89-71, but a chance to jump back back on things tonight, taking on Edmonton at 7:30. We'll have the game for you here on TSN 1200 as well. To talk about opening weekend, we welcome to the show the president of the CEBL, Mike Morreale, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Thanks a lot for joining us. I'm sure you were, you and everybody involved with the league, you know, you put all these plans in place, you think you got everything covered, and then inevitably something pops up at the last minute to throw a wrinkle into things. But overall, what was your assessment on your opening weekend down in St. Catharines?
Well, you know what, it's been a bit of a triathlon to get to this point, and I'm happy to say that the opening weekend went really well. We had some great games. I think the level of competition has been exposed, and I think people now realize how good of a product and how good of an athletes that are not only in the CBL, but what we have in Canada. And it was a great pleasure just to sit back and watch those games over the last couple of days.
Mike, do you feel with the extended time off now getting back at it, that as you move along in the tournament, the play will just get better and better?
Yeah, I think the guys need to get their legs under them a bit. When you get the live bullet, so to speak, it takes a little bit to get adjusted. And I think, specifically to Ottawa, there's a team there that's uber talented, and they just need to get back to playing together in real games, as do a lot of our teams. We've had what I would say about three upsets already over the first 2 days, at least on paper. But it's one of those tournaments that I think we're going to see a logjam at some point or another in the standings, because it's highly competitive, and I think point differential is going to come into play in a big way.
Now, you mentioned that obviously Ottawa is a new team. I don't really know the rosters from last year. Is there a significant turnover, Mike, from team to team, or have most of the teams returned, I'll say most of their key players this year?
I would say a handful of teams, Edmonton, Niagara, probably those two predominantly kept similar rosters. Most of the other teams went and, kept a core group or a few guys here and there and added to it. So what we noticed from year one to year two, and what we were hoping, it came to fruition like we thought. We got an influx of about 75 new players to the league, all of which are highly talented, high-level players, national team members, G League players, NCAA stars, former NBA players. So it kind of proves our concept a little bit. So that's the exciting part. What it does now, it makes it very difficult to get a handle on. Some of these teams that stayed the same are now going up against teams that are radically different. And I think that's what people saw on the weekend is a bunch of teams that maybe weren't on paper the ones that were thought to win, but they certainly did.
Nice gauge and wake-up call for Ottawa to get the level, because I guess you can put a team together, and they'll need time to get their chemistry, but you really don't know what you're playing against until you go into competition.
Yeah, that's it. It's all competition, and really, all of our guys, for the most part, are the big one or two high-level guys on their teams all over Europe and otherwise. So they come in there, they're the big dogs, they're the ones they're brought in, they're the one or two imports, and then they play with their, the domestic talent, whether they're in Turkey or Germany or Russia or wherever. What we have the luxury is we have all those top imports overseas are our domestic players here. So we assemble them all and bring them back home. So the competition level and the quality of basketball is tremendous. And I think what needs, for all teams, but I think maybe like a team like Ottawa experience was the intensity level, because they haven't been in that competition. They've competed overseas and it's very high level basketball, but I don't know if they were prepared for the style of basketball the CBL is, but I know they'll be prepared now. And it's a, there's many more games left to kind of get in the proper seating for the playoffs.
Talking to Mike Morreale, the president of the CEBL, the Canadian Elite Basketball League, began their tournament over the weekend. Mike, were you actually in St. Catharines for the games on the weekend?
Oh, yeah. I'm a gym rat now, so yeah. I don't miss anything.
What was it, and certainly watching and listening to the simulcast here on TSN 1200 as well, the Blackjacks game, there's, like at all these sports, right, there is no fans. What was kind of the feel inside the gym?
It's different at times. We play music during our game. That's typically what we do, in a normal season, so we incorporated that. So that does help kind of drown out the emptiness of a empty stadium. You really notice it when we go to break and we kind of turn it down or there's a foul shot, it gets dead quiet. It is the new reality for now. So we hope it doesn't last forever. But we're making the best of it. We've done the best we could to make the venue as intimate as possible. And notice it hasn't resulted in any slip in the quality of play. So I think there's no real home court advantage. So in that respect, it's just a battle all game long.
Did you like the presentation on TV and the way it came across?
I did. I mean, for our initial broadcast of the year, it was great. It was a great launching point. We're going to add to it as we continue to move forward. We were trending in Canada on Twitter, so that was a nice thing to see for us because we certainly worked hard at building the brand and getting the exposure. So now it's just about getting better, just like the teams are trying to improve. We always try to improve off the court as well. And our next kind of, we're on, through our webcast throughout the remainder of the week. We're back on TV on Saturday and then the following Saturday and then the following Sunday. So I know when we get to the championship game, it's going to be a fantastic part of our presentation.
Part of the presentation, of course, is having, and the most important part, is having the players buy in. They've been in St. Catharines now for the most part since about midweek last week, so about 5-6 days in particular. How have the players off the court been kind of settling into the, we'll call it the bubble environment that you put together in the CEBL?
Yeah, it's been good. I think they've found, they kind of maintain that kind of team environment. So they kind of go in packs and do their own thing, which is great because from a safety perspective, that also helps us to mitigate risk. Some of our players have been here since June 30th, our international players, and the ones that came to and did training camp in St. Catharines have been here since July 13th. So it's been a while already. Ottawa came a little late because they did their camp in town. But I feel like they've become accustomed to it. They have a routine in place. They do their practice. They do their games. They do their meetings. And then they fill in time with meals and whatever else they do. So now that the competition is here, I feel like everything is getting a lot tighter. There's less time to go about and do extracurricular activities. And that's good because the concentration should be on the game.
Did you have to speak to coaches and players and I guess just overall as an organization to make sure people are responsible enough and kind of show some respect to the process?
Yeah, I beat them over the head with it regularly on a daily basis. I don't think you can do that enough. We've got a lot of respectful people and great coaches and great presidents and everything. And I have them help deliver my message because I think what we've learned in this situation and everyone will learn that returns under COVID is communication is utterly important, but it's very difficult in this environment to be in front of people, be able to gather people together and share one message. So often I'm sharing the same message 7, 8, 9 times to different groups of people. And it's tiring. It's well worth it, but it is something that we have to maintain and stay on top of. And really we just take all our direction from the health authorities. So whatever they say, we follow. And if there's ever an issue, we report it to them and they manage it. And that's been really beneficial, that partnership.
How often are you testing the players and the staffs?
So players and staff have been tested already 2 times, some 3 times, depending on the situation. And they were available for additional testing at any particular time. So what we do now is manage the symptoms and the transmission. And that's the most important part of the process. Testing sounds great in theory. It really practically doesn't make sense unless there's a reason to do it. So we manage that daily screening and protocols every day, and we compare them against all teams and against days past and so on and so forth. So we know if we see any fluctuations in player symptoms, and we have not seen any, which is really good. And I think that goes to you know, what the population of Ontario has been able to do to flatten the curve, and what in particular Niagara has been able to do to control it, and the players having to follow the protocols of social distancing and mask wearing and sanitation. And that takes up the majority of our time, is really carving out time to ensure that everything is safe and sound. So it's a lot of work, but it's work that needs to be done because we want to keep that safe environment all the way to the end.
How has the, I guess, the cost of testing, how has that been handled by the league? Have you had any help from sponsors or companies or anything else?
Well, listen, you know, we have been had the support of the health agencies. They have been able to help us in terms of getting available testing without, you know, having any negative effect on the general population. So we've managed all that seamlessly through through the region and through the province. And to date, it hasn't been met with any, you know, any issues regarding expenses. So we are, and we have ready accessible, you know, contact with the health authorities. And we're a smaller group than you would typically have in an NHL bubble or an NBA bubble. So it's a lot more manageable for us and them to handle that process for us.
I'm sure you, as the head of the league, your worst case scenario is to have an outbreak. I'm just reading online as you've been speaking, Mike, that the Miami Marlins have announced that 8 more players and 2 coaches have tested positive and they've canceled their game tonight. And that is, you know, all of the sports, it's been, I've used the term, a bit of a house of cards, right? You're wishing and hoping and doing all the things you can, but you never really know. At the end of the day, the virus is what rules. That's got to be your biggest concern. And I know you're it's 2 weeks and you're done. And I'm imagining, yep, 2 weeks from today, if you're able to pull this off, you'll be a very happy guy, right?
I will. I'm not going to lie. There's a pit in my stomach every day because of the unknown, you know, that fear of the unknown. I know we're doing all the right things, but we don't know, understand the virus. We just don't know how it gets from point A to point B and who delivers it. And you know, we feel really comfortable, but it's the emotional part of what we do. And I think that's what most leagues now are probably experiencing, is the emotion that is tied with the unknown and the threat of a positive test and what that could mean. And you really can't control how 200 and 250 people may think. And no matter what you hear and what we're told by government authorities and health officials, it's still a personal gut feeling and a gut reaction. And that, to me, has been the roller coaster ride that we've been on, and something I want to share at some point with anybody who is looking to do what we do and do it safely.
All right. Well, great start on the weekend. I was really impressed with just the presentation on television, and certainly the level of basketball for a lot of us exposed for the first time having a team here in Ottawa. And they'll play again tonight. Looking forward to listening to that game here on TSN 1200. Mike, appreciate the time this morning, and we'll look forward to checking in with you again down the road. And good luck with the rest of the tournament as well.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. There's Mike Morreale, head of the Canadian Elite Basketball League, joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. It is Blackjacks and the Edmonton Stingers tonight. Both teams off to an 0-1 start tonight for you on TSN 1200. So we'll come back and we'll talk about that breaking news from Major League Baseball that yet there has been, and this is the worst case scenario that all these team sports have thought about. What happens if we have a large outbreak on one team? And it looks like we've got one in the Miami Marlins. So we're going to talk about that when we come back on TSN 1200. League baseball, but they ain't going to Florida. At least the Miami Marlins are not. The team was in Philadelphia for its opening series this past weekend. Reportedly, as many as 4 players over the weekend had either through exposure or had tested positive for COVID-19. And now, as the team put over its trip from last night to this morning, it appears that 8 more players and 2 coaches with the Marlins have tested positive. The home opener tonight for the Marlins has been canceled. And right now we are in wait and see as far as how this is going to play itself out. Again, there are 60 players on each of the rosters around Major League Baseball. So in terms of being able to trot out enough players for the here and now, you're going to be able to do that. But with how virulent this virus is, how easily it appears to spread, and we have all been witness to it. We have you know, seen the outbreaks, especially in the United States and especially in Florida and Texas and California and Arizona. To see this happen so, we'll call it, relatively early in the process. I mean, Simmer, where does that leave your faith level? that Major League Baseball is going to be able to overcome this and overcome everything and get a season in.
Well, I had a little faith in the whole model, just trying to understand moving all around the United States, going to these hot spots, and now you look at something like this. Yeah, no, I don't have any, and now teams have to go in there, or do the Marlins go somewhere else? Where do you end up playing this? And hearing the Blue Jays talking about, you know, I don't want to go to Buffalo because I want a locker room, and I would have thought that some of these teams, and whether you set up four-team tournaments, that you would have gone to smaller centers. I think it was it the Hartford, maybe not an example, say Binghamton or some of these places where, you know what, wouldn't you take a team and get them away from that and stop worrying? If it's a field, it's a field. Just get out and play the games.
Yeah. Well, there are logistical issues, right, as far as television and lighting and all that, play a role in all of this, but... you have to wonder whether, especially in the hot spots, you got a couple of teams in Florida, right? You've got two in Texas, you've got Arizona, you got a bunch of teams in California or whatever, and those are the really hard hit areas right now. I wonder if Major League Baseball is going to look at it and say, you know what, you guys are going to all have to be traveling bands now. You're going to have to be like the Blue Jays and maybe not have a home, and you're going to have to play essentially all your games on the road this year. Games that were scheduled to be at home, you'll play those teams. You'll be the home team, the de facto home team, but you'll play them in their parks.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have teams still fly around, you're going to have to keep them out of the hot spots. Yeah. That's what's really obvious.
No, right you now. Are. And the team that is hosting the hot spot, well, that's a problem itself, is the players come back into the community, families. And then the other issue you have, hey, any athlete that goes to these different places, temptation of wanting to go out after a game or do something and going down to Old South Beach, hanging out. I mean, this is for lots of reasons why you would think they would want to have steered clear of this. Major League Baseball.
Right. And of course, what you've got is, if you kind of connect the dots, you had the two catchers for the Atlanta Braves test positive last week. Well, they had played the Miami Marlins in an exhibition games earlier last week. Then they test positive. And then now you've got all these Marlins players that have tested positive over the weekend. Well, who did they play? They played the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, it's all these dominoes, right? So now we kind of got to wait and see and see what is going to be the impact on not only the players on the team that has this widespread infection, like Miami does, but on the team they just played as well.
Yeah, and I'd also want, if I'm MLB, figure out why did this happen. You're not using the same locker room. Is it contact? How are players handling themselves at batting practice? Do guys have masks on? Are you over talking to your buddies from the other team? I'd probably want to understand some of the behavioral patterns, because really most of the sport, or if it's that contagious that there's the batter that gives it to the catcher, well, obviously you're in some real trouble, but I'd like to try to figure out, hey, why has it trended this way so quickly?
Yeah. So it's, if you're a sports fan, it's disappointing, but I'll tell you what, it's to me at least, it's not surprising. I think we had talked about in the weeks leading up to all of these team sports coming back that Major League Baseball's plan had the most holes in it, had the most potential to fall apart. I think the NFL is, quite frankly, no different. I think they're going to have, and you're talking even more players to start, right? You got, 80 to 90 players in training camp starting later on this week, times 30 teams.
Yeah.
You know, do the math. How many of those guys are going to be showing up? Some of them asymptomatic, get tested, and a very physical sport. You have to just wonder, the viability of football, let alone baseball. And I think at the end of the day, hockey and basketball, in terms of the team sports, got it right. It remains to be seen if it'll hold.
Yeah.
But I think I'll go back to, at this point, I think the NHL has the best plan in place. They're in the best spot. They've got the best chance of being able to see this thing through.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the National Football League, again, players, if they're in a training camp, how many? Well, all of them are going in and out of the facility. And I don't know the contact part of on the field. Wouldn't pretend for a second that in a contact sport. But I'm going to guess that your chances are within your facility itself. As everybody enters the weight room, everybody at some point has to go to the medical room and then go to the shower. Like the human contamination throughout your facility must be, I would look at that and think, my chances of going in there, if there's a spread and not getting it, I'd consider myself lucky.
So I'm just kind of reading through while you're speaking there, some of the various baseball insiders. John Heyman is a guy I follow. He's just tweeted out that 40% of the Marlins active players are now positive for COVID.
Wow.
11 players have now tested positive. And Yeah, so 12 of 30 is what they're looking at right now. Well, 12 of the 30 active players.
Yeah, and this also would go back to understanding the darn testing, because here it is that I've had an outbreak in my team. Hey, you guys stay in Philadelphia. Obviously, you didn't test properly. What do you all do? Or did they all stay in Philadelphia, or did they get on the bird and head back to Miami?
No, they stayed. They were, they were scheduled to fly home last night. So once they had the outbreak over the weekend, they decided to remain. I think while they did further testing last night, and obviously more of those players have contracted the virus.
Yeah.
And so the point was going to be there, the healthy players were going to fly back today. Well, now they've lost so many players that will they have enough players to play down the road, be it tomorrow or whatever? Yes.
Yeah.
But you've got, if you're Major League Baseball, you've got to be concerned about, you know, just the, with so much unknown still about the virus, even guys who are testing negative at this point. You know, do you want to take the, if you're their next opponent, which I think is Baltimore.
Yeah.
If you're a Baltimore Oriole player right now, you going to want to play against the Miami Marlins in a baseball game tomorrow?
No, for sure. And then for MLB, if you start canceling more of their games, logistically, not as big a deal nowadays. You can get people, you're not trying to sell tickets, but I got to play a schedule. I got to try to balance it out. Now, I'll say for baseball, the fact that it's the start of the regular season and, you know, God forbid you end up canceling it. Well, I think for the NBA and the NHL, and everybody's trying to make money back, but in the case of the NHL, you're also a little nervous in that there's no return point. Like, you are financially, as a sport, you know, you need this to happen on a lot of different levels, and the last thing you want is to get down to a Final Four and end up having your championship compromised, right? That to me,
that's
would be
when
more,
you bubble wrap everybody.
Well, that would be more of a letdown to a sport, where baseball, I you know, I guess also my mood for baseball, for the way this has been handled with the collective bargaining agreement, the players, to everything else. You're just kind of, I had a bad taste to start with, and also never had any faith that would happen. So we'll see.
Yeah. And the other part of it is, even with the, you know, canceling a game here, and maybe they look at it and you go, okay, we separated out the positive guys. We're going to go right back at it tomorrow. We'll take more guys that are on our inactive list and put them on the roster and play. They've got 60 games scheduled for 66 days. Like, there is not a, they have not kind of built in extra time in case you needed to, I don't know, shut, and I don't know if it's realistic to shut down a team for a week. It probably isn't realistic, but you know what I mean? They are going from, you play a series, boom, you're flying out that night, you're going to into the new city or back home or whatever, and you're playing the very next night. Like, there is, let alone rainouts and things like that. Like, there is little to no built-in extra time in the Major League Baseball schedule to make up for if you have to cancel, let's say, even three or four games this week while you get things under control.
Well, and what you were hoping is a lot of fans got excited by the expanded playoff to 16, where that's kind of where you say, hey, let's have some fun pennant races down the stretch here. But you want to get to that playoff part, and you also want to get there while the weather's still decent.
All right. So anyway, that is the breaking news for Major League Baseball, that it appears now upwards of perhaps 12 players and a couple of coaches with the Miami Marlins have tested positive in what would be, I think, more than fair to say, a major outbreak within one team. And I think if you talked about 12 players over all of Major League Baseball, but you put one player on each team, you could probably find a way around that. Separate them out, and hopefully the rest of your players are good. When you're talking about one team being affected this much, I think that's the worst-case scenario for a sport. So thoughts on that? Always welcome. Text us at 12-1200. I know a lot of people right now are saying, just cancel the season, baseball. That's it. We'll find out what Major League Baseball decides to do coming up probably in the next few hours. 9:41, we'll take a break, come back. We'll look at some things on this day in sports history, celebrate some sports birthdays as well as we continue along here on a Monday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Jack, over the weekend, there had been reports over the past few weeks that Eddie was in ill health. He passed away on the weekend at the age of 83. You spent some time with certainly all hockey fans are familiar with Eddie Shack, but you spent some time, obviously, in management with the Maple Leafs. Was he around quite a bit, or what?
No, JR, never seen him. George Armstrong was the one around, but there's no doubt. You have that phase of Wendell Clark to Dougie Gilmore to Daryl Sittler, but for the old-school fans, this was a golden era of the 60s, right? And I know everyone jokes here, but last time they won the Stanley Cup was in 1967. So saw lots of characters along the way, never had a chance to meet him. And like I say, that was just a different era, right? I mean, when Pooley was on, talked about him and Tiger Williams. And I went to watch a game in Detroit back in the day, and I went down to the glass. I think Tiger was playing for LA at the time, and he was actually trying to fight some of the fans in the stands. it's just a different time, right? And you know, so like I said, he certainly marketed himself in terms turned into a real character.
Oh, absolutely. Probably spent more or made more money on the after-dinner circuit and doing appearances than he ever would have in the NHL, especially playing back in the 1960s, but won four Stanley Cups with the Maple Leafs in the 60s, in the early part of the 60s, including with that 67 team, which, for those of you who don't know, was the last team from Toronto that won a Stanley Cup. That would be 53 years ago. We'll see if that changes this year. But Eddie Shack passed away on the weekend at the age of 83. We also lost Regis Philbin on the weekend as well at the age of 88. Of course, very familiar with for early morning television viewers, right? For Regis and Kathy Lee in the day, and then Regis and Kelly, and then Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? In prime time, and he was the ultimate guest pinch hit guy for Letterman, right? When Letterman would have a last second guest bailout, it was kind of like, get Regis on the phone and he'll come over here and be a great guest every time. But Regis Philbin passed away in the weekend as well.
And gosh, maybe the last time I watched a little bit of daytime TV, I used to watch whatever on the road or I guess at home, he and Kathy. And when the show transitioned, I guess like anything, when you get used to it, never felt like it. And of course, Kathy Lee was married to legendary football player Frank Gifford. That kind of went sideways, so that was awkward. And as far as Regis, just a big, big name. And it also felt like, you know, not, I wouldn't say over-promoting himself, but he had worked very hard so long in his career that to finally be on a national show like that, you could just see where, hey, he was just loving it, right? Loving life of being a celebrity and going different places and was always around the Yankees and Rudy Giuliani and, real nice career.
Yeah, and a great gift of the gab as well. All right, 9:48. One quick note from over the weekend, if you missed it, no more tag days for Ottawa guy Neville Gallimore. He signed his rookie contract with the Dallas Cowboys on Saturday, which will net him, I'm reading here, a nice signing bonus of $610,000 right there in the old bank account. And I'm assuming it's an old transfer. Can you imagine if you're a collegiate athlete? First of all, you're from Ottawa, you're a collegiate athlete at Oklahoma. You're probably looking at your bank account every single day, and it's like probably in the negative range, or you're bumming money off your parents or whatever.
Oh, for sure.
And then there's a day you open up the old app on your phone, and you go, oh, I appear to have $610,000 in my bank account. How's it going?
Mr. Taxman, come by and take a little bit, but you're going, and this is really what is strange, and you get into people talking about how NCAA athletes, well, yeah, a lot of them, and I've had guys come out of college that are going to be pro players. They have basically 61 cents or $61 or maybe $6.10. The way they're dressed and what they basically live on is, what is my life like? Well, hopefully you're getting education, but in his case, playing football, okay. I'm either training or I'm eating or I'm sleeping. Those are my three focuses on a 24-hour day, and if I can squeeze in some... So that ability now to financially be there, it must be an incredible feeling. And for a Canadian kid, probably 5 or 6 years ago, JR, you couldn't have imagined that you'd not only be in the National Football League, but you'd be with the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, this day in sports history, this July the 27th, as you can imagine, there's a few things that revert around the old Summer Olympics. We're kind of into that time frame, but also... 1984, on this day, Pete Rose of the then Montreal Expos passed Ty Cobb as the all-time singles leader. Collected hit number 3,053, 3,053rd single off Steve Carlton in a 6-1 Expos win over the Phillies. Were you a fan of the Expos when Pete Rose was on the team?
No, I think I had transferred over to the Blue Jays bandwagon, okay. But I'll have to check my timeline.
That was just before they won their first, or were in the running. 85 was kind of the first really good Blue Jay year.
Yeah, and I guess we've had so many athletes, but I'll put, if I had a Mount Rushmore, I'm only going to go with three. I'll go with Ben Johnson, Lance Armstrong, and Pete Rose, the people that had incredible careers of things going, and is just eliminated, right? Like, it's like, hey, whatever. I don't care what you did, and don't care. Nobody wants to talk to you. Like, what a tarnished career, after career you end up having, unfortunately.
On this day in 1988, Frank Zamboni. Any idea who Frank Zamboni is, Simmer?
I can take a couple of guesses. But
the inventor of the ice resurfacing machine that bears his name died at the age of 87 in 1949. Yeah. Zamboni invented a machine that transformed resurfacing the ice into a 15-minute, one-man task.
Minnesota-based, or...?
It says the Boston. It's the Boston Bruins put one to work in 54. It doesn't say that he's from Boston.
Yeah,
but.
And did you have the unfortunate time of traveling around where some of the U.S. rinks had the one that was attached to the ceiling? they used to emit all these different smells into the rink where you're like, I don't know if that's really that safe that you end up having them. But no, that's that day. That's a game changer. Yeah. Now we have multiple Zambonis come out game time.
On this day in 1995, Brendan Shanahan was traded to the St. Louis Blues by the St. Louis Blues to the Hartford Whalers for Chris Pronger, who came up earlier in the show as, I don't know, maybe somebody Arizona might look at as a general manager. But you remember that big deal in the NHL?
Yeah, and funny, the domino effect of that. If you remember back, it was the St. Louis Blues that gave a massive offer sheet to Shanahan. New Jersey said nope, and at the time it was interesting. St. Louis was offering up Cujo and Rob Brind'Amour, which not too bad. But Lou said, no, I don't think so. I'm going to ask for Scott Stevens. So Scott Stevens goes there. Those teams in St. Louis between he and Hulley and Housley never met their goaltender other than in the locker room. Like, you talk about cheating hockey in numbers. And, hey, that was a hell of a trade for St. Louis. And I don't know if it would have been Mike Keenan that would have pulled that off. But, you know, at that point, Shanahan was a little bit off course and got back on track when he went to Detroit finally.
Yeah. Shanahan played, I don't remember, only 1 year in Hartford?
Yeah.
He scored 44 goals and got traded the next year to Detroit, where, of course, he went on to win three cups.
Yeah, pretty documented that I think in-house there was a fair amount going on there.
Right. We'll leave it at that. Chris Pronger, of course, ended up winning a Stanley Cup a decade later with the Anaheim Ducks. On this day in 1996, the Atlanta Olympic Park bombing incident. Do you remember the name Richard Jewell?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Who was initially, a suspect in that. Eventually, his name was cleared, and 9 years later, someone else pleaded guilty to the Atlanta Olympic Park bombing, which killed one and injured 110.
Yeah, no, that was such a big deal at the time and kind of his life. And you looked at it and thought, I don't know, not feeling that. And I thought that there was a gentleman of interest that they chased for years that was basically living off of the woods in North Carolina, right? But that was one of those, guilty until proven innocent, right? I mean, what he went through, and it's well documented, also a movie done, basically ruined his life as the media and everybody else thought he had done this.
Yeah, I saw the movie a couple months back, or I think it came out in December. A real good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On this day in 2012, the London Summer Olympics began. So that was 8 years ago today.
Yeah, my biggest memory of that was being so upset when Canada played the United States on that phony call that they got. Was it the goaltender holding the ball too long? The fix was in. Like, I remember how emotional. First of all, I love when Canada knocks off the United States, but I just couldn't believe that one. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
That was the semifinal, correct?
Yeah, because
the U.S. moved on and eventually won. Christine Sinclair was just unbelievable, right? She had the hat trick for Canada.
Yeah.
They ended up losing 4-3, but went on to rebound and win the bronze medal match after that loss. But you're right. If I think about, remember what happened in the 2012 Summer Olympics, and you jogged my memory to that one, and that's like, okay, was there anything better that happened? And I'm sure there were if I went back and revisited, but that was a huge, huge moment of Canadiana.
And with, is it John Herdman that's now on the national team, the men's side? As we see the rise of Alphonso Davies and we get to a phase where Canada's playing more internationally, I've got to think, JR, that's going to be a mega draw. I mean, for his acceptance in Germany, and when we had our good friend on, Timmy Stutzla, he did guarantee that he's a big deal in Germany. I've got to think the interest in our national team is going to go through the roof.
Birthdays today. Happy birthday to our good friend, Big Al Charon. One of the greatest, if not the greatest, Canadian rugby players of all time, of course, from right here in Ottawa, turning the ripe old age of 54 today. So congratulations. Happy birthday to Al Charon.
Yeah, great career for himself. But hands down, the best rugby player we've ever had. Super local guy. Went to St. Pius High School and... always fun to run into him, and I don't know if we're going to have a kickoff party in the back parking lot this year, but always was cool when he'd show up in the past to help serve.
Yes, and I'm sure that Big Al would be happy to celebrate a birthday with Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Very popular
the
guy.
Two Al's. Yeah. Eh?
Alex Rodriguez, 3-time MVP, 3,000 career hits, 1-time World Series champion, 696 career home runs, his 4th all-time, perhaps the biggest fraud in all of baseball as well. He turns the ripe old age of 45 today.
Yeah, and also probably best known as J-Lo's sidekick. I tried to watch him last week, JR, in one of the broadcasts, and I don't know. I'd heard he's polished, and I know he's got the look, and he can speak both languages. I just don't know. I don't find anything he talks about very sincere, so I wasn't a fan of watching
the
broadcast.
I love the fact that as a player, a guy who tried to bleed every single single dollar out of every team he played for, now wants to become an owner and bring in a salary cap.
Yeah.
That's just too rich for me.
Well, that's like Shanny asking everyone to buy into the plan.
Yeah.
The plan that he never followed his entire career. He'd go for the extra 10 cents if he had to.
1984 was the day that Max Scherzer, speaking of great baseball players, was born. Three-time Cy Young Award winner with the Tigers and the Nats, still going strong at the age of 36. And also celebrating a 27th birthday today is Jordan Spieth. Three-time major champion. Did you know, Simmer, that he has not won a golf tournament since winning the British Open in 2017? So we're coming up, well, we would have just passed 3 years since Jordan Spieth won a tournament.
Yeah, and think of him come onto the scene, and you've touched on it a couple of times where he's kind of at, but there was a bit of a feeling when he started off this was going to be Tiger Woods that he couldn't lose, right? And he's just hit a hitch here where it doesn't sound like he can put four rounds of good golf together. It's just been a complete roller coaster. I guess reaching fame and fortune and all the other things, there's probably a lot more that can go on in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, and some hockey birthdays. Not a long list of exceptionally well-known hockey people, but Craig Willanen, father of Sens defenseman Christian Willanen, is turning 53 today. Won a cup with the Avalanche in 1996.
Yeah, still remember him coming to the Ottawa International Tournament, playing for Detroit Compuware. First-round pick, had a real nice career for himself, and pretty cool now that his son, I'm assuming when we start the season up, will be one of the top six defensemen for the Ottawa Senators as he'll kick into that one-way contract, just over $1 million.
Turning 71 today, if you're an old-time Philadelphia Flyer fan, you'll know the name Moose DuPont. Always had a bit of an edge to his game.
Yeah.
One of the fearsome players on that Broad Street Bullies team. Ended his career with the Quebec Nordiques and became a scout with the Ottawa Senators in the early days as well. Moose DuPont is 71 today.
Yeah, he would have been tight with Mel Bridgman, probably tight with Fergie at the time. And last week when you were off, another Philadelphia Flyer passed away, old Jack McElhargy. That's old school. And what you need when you're going to be the Broad Street Bullies, you need Schultze, you need Battleship, you need a couple.
Don Selesky.
Well, but then everybody else just comes in and is a weasel. Like, you don't, your toughness level of where you're at when you've got all the big boys with you, including Bobby Clark, ends up being, but amazing to think back to that team winning back-to-back Stanley Cups.
And two more. Jason Woolley turns 51 today, drafted by your Washington Capitals in the early 90s.
Yeah, I talked to Jason quite a bit. Actually, has a cottage just outside of town here. Lives in Detroit, and I'm trying to process fairly quickly, but we were talking about some different players. He actually coaches in one of the associations down there and was just talking about how good some of the players are. Good guy. He went to the Olympics, and we ended up trading him fairly quickly. He ended up having a real nice career for himself coming out of Michigan State, so really, really quality guy.
Yeah. Nah.